Welcome to the Kingdom Crossroads Podcast with Pastor Robert Thibodeau. Using an interview format, Pastor Bob will introduce you to men and women whose ministries are impacting this world with the gospel, and will also provide commentary and insight on end-time prophetic events we now see happening in the news. Now here is Pastor Robert Thibodeau.
Amen. And you do a lot of online work, you know, and now, yeah. Especially with this virus thing going on at the time of this recording, you know, stores are shut down and almost everything's moving online. And there are many people either trying to move online or start an online business. What are the things that separate a successful online business from one that's failing?
So I'll tell you what I did, and you know, maybe that'll help like shine a light on it. I was running an SEO agency in Atlanta after selling the coffee shop because I bought that impulsively and I don't drink coffee, right? So that I
sorry, so I do.
Yeah. So I was running an SEO agency, and the way I ran the agency was we were getting leads through our website. But then I went in person to sell, right? Okay. So it was an online business, but there was a component that was offline, right? And it worked fine until I realized that I would like to travel the world. Because what's the point of having an online business if you cannot travel the world? That was just my thinking back then. And around that time, the block network thing happened and our website stopped getting leads because most of it was tied together. So I was at a situation where I now had to figure out how to rebuild my business, but also decide what kind of business I want to run. Right. And that's something that you should always think when you're going into something, because what mostly happens is you finally make it and you realize I'm just still selling time for money. And I just have a glorified job with no boss, in a way. I mean, you know, you can say the clients are your boss, but it depends how, I guess, known you are. Because if you can fire and hire clients easily, they're not really your boss anymore, you know, because you can switch them any moment. So you could get to that point where you just have a very good job. But back to my story was when I was doing that and I realized, okay, I want to move overseas. The first step was when I was rebuilding my business, I put some constraints on it, right? And the first constraint was I cannot be selling in person anymore, right? If I ever want to. So I put that constraint on. I got to keep it strictly online, okay. Whether it's phone calls, whether it's, you know, emails, anything, just put that constraint in and look. Back then, there was no virus. So this was like a self-made constraint that, you know. And before I moved overseas, I moved up north within the States just to see if it was still working, like whatever method I developed. And then finally, I moved overseas. But also, and this is the lucky part, the book publishing thing took off. So I actually had an income stream while I was still building my business for like 4 years that was making money all the time without me doing anything.
Yeah.
Right? But that's, again, coming from just having that, you know, taking that opportunity. And when I built the next, I guess, iteration of the SEO business and then just a regular marketing business, like if I couldn't sell you on the phone or through email, I just told you to go away. Mm-hmm. You know, and it made me become a better copywriter. Because now copy sells. Like you said, you went to my website, you liked the case studies before the call. Well, I just became better at putting out what I do, where now people do go through my website. They know exactly what they need to do. They book the call. Then we figure out if there's a fit, and I don't need to see you ever in person. Like we don't, you know, which was the goal. Yeah.
Yeah.
So in this time, well, you know, if you're starting out, it's not a self-made constraint. Like you have a physical constraint. You can't see people. So you got to figure out, which is fine. It's just you're building the business you want to build. Okay, well, I maybe don't want to deal with clients at all, right? Mm-hmm. Which is okay. Maybe I want to build a productized type of business, which means that I would like a website, and there's a lot of these too, where I just want people to come to the website, see what I'm offering, click, buy, and I never see or speak to them.
Okay.
You can build that type of business, right? There's a lot of different things you can do. Online courses are great too, because once you kind of put your information out, you know, you monetize that expertise, there's no overhead, the course sells by itself, people learn on their own time. You know, the only thing that's left is marketing.
Right.
And maybe customer service and support, like if you want to do that.
Yeah, that's a lot of actually got started in the podcast training platform, because I've been doing this for about 10 years with the radio station and all that. And I'd always get asked questions about, well, what kind of microphone should I use? How's my audio? How do I edit? And over the course of, you know, half a dozen years, my lightning fast mind figured out I'm getting asked the same questions all the time. If I just put this down into a cheat sheet type form, you know, I can just here you go. There you go. And then that led into the next and the next and the next. And now, you know, it's the podcast training program. So yeah, I can see where, you know, people who are online, maybe in an area over here, make that transition over into the courses simply because they're being asked by their client, well, how can I do this better? And the questions are the same. Matter of fact, you know, right now the internet is full of information. I mean, many call it information marketing. But as we were just alluding to that, what's the difference really between information marketing, online marketing, or online course marketing?
So we kind of went through this transition over the last decade where before people would pay for information, right? People would actually pay to read something or look at something. And now it's free. It's on YouTube. It's everywhere. Like, you know, no one pays for that anymore. What people want from an online course is to transform.
Okay.
And they basically want to know, okay, let's say I want to become a travel agent, right? Just an example. And before taking this course, I'm not a travel agent. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. After this course, you will teach me how to set up my business, get my first client, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And I now transformed into this person. Then we put a value on the transformation, and people will pay for that. Also, when you sell a course, and since we're talking about it, you know, normally when you sell something, there's a product market fit. Right? That's all that needs to happen. You know, the product fits the market. Mm-hmm. With a course, the educator fit is a third component. People actually need to like you to want to learn from you, right? If you're not the right teacher, they'll go somewhere else. So that part does, you know, kind of factor in there too. But people will pay for, and again, you have two different types of shoppers, you know? So we have to kind of go into that. You have the Walmart shopper and you have the Nordstrom shopper, right? Right. The Walmart shoppers, they like deals, bundles, a lot of things, and they'll never touch them. That's what usually happens, right? So this is when you see Udemy, you know, doing really well because, you know, for only $7, I'm going to give you 30 hours of all this content and some toilet paper. And this guy's like, yes. Nordstrom shopper, He's like, 30 hours, that's insane. My hour is worth $300 or so. It's going to take me, what, $9,000 to go through this? No, thank you. So what a Nordstrom shopper is looking for, I need you to transform me. The transformation needs to have a value quickly. Can you do it in an hour? I'll pay $600 for that or $1,000. You know what I mean? So what they're looking is value my time, cut all the fluff out. Don't give me any nonsense. I want to consume this. I'm going to take action on this. I'm going to pay for it, and I want to have results, right? And that's when you see the big courses, the big value courses.
Amen.
But you can make money in both. You can make money in both markets, right? Like often what I tell people to do is put out intro stuff on Udemy, you know, and then lead people in to your high value course. You know, a small percentage will buy. But at least you kind of have both of the, you know, like the, you have the low hanging fruit and then you have the actual things that you're selling.
It's kind of like at Nordstrom, you know, they put out the discounted clearance items on the sidewalk.
Yes. Yeah. Don't even have it in the store. I know. Yeah. It's pretty much, I guess.
Hey, man, I can picture that because I've seen it.
Yeah. But that's, you know, because you have the two different shoppers, right? And they feel like, well, like we don't really want those in the store, but we still want them to buy. So let's put them, you know, but they still, you know, take care of that. So,
yeah. When you still can say, I bought from Nordstrom.
You can, yeah. And when you're, you know, building up your offer, one of the things you need to kind of decide is who am I selling it to? Mm-hmm. I personally always say don't sell to broke people. Mm-hmm. Because that's where all the problems come out. You know, broke people want the most for nothing, right? Yeah. So that's just from my experience. But if you have a third-party platform that you're just kind of putting some nonsense out for them, and they're taking care of the rest, there's no, you know, nothing wrong with that. It's not, you know, but if you're actually providing a service or anything on your own, I would recommend to, you know, not deal with that crowd because it's going to be problematic.
Amen. Amen.
So there are different things you need to decide with your business. Before the call, we spoke a bit about niches, and I kind of want to mention that because it's also very, very, very important.
Okay.
When I first built up Smart Brand Marketing, we marketed anyone, right? So any company needed marketing, we said yes. What happened was that it became very hard to stay competitive. If someone came to me and said, why should I choose you over someone like Jay Abraham, which was a huge name in the marketing space, I'd say nothing if you can afford them. There's like, I would go work with them. Why work with me, right? But by moving into the online course marketing space, I very quickly became a big fish in a small pond, still lucrative pond, but in a small pond. And now if someone said like, well, why should I go with you over someone like Jay Abraham? Like, well, because Jay Abraham hires me. He knows nothing about online courses, right? So I took the marketing, but you know, I niched down. And it became much easier, you know. Yeah. So that's another thing which you should consider, you know, like don't think of getting 1% from a billion people market because you're not going to get it. You know, you can make a lot of money being in a smaller niche with even 80,000 people.
Yeah.
You know, but just by being quickly becoming the best and people know, you know, well, if you don't go with Tom, like, you know, like what are you going to do? So it just becomes very easy, right? And I really recommend that too, to kind of, you know, like when you were talking about, you know, the podcast hosting, but then being in a Christian niche, I was like, well, then, you know, now you have something, you know, because there's, you're a Christian podcasting host. Well, why should people go with you and not Libsyn? Well, if there's a Christian angle, Libsyn's not, you know. So there you go. Like, there's no competition now. Like, you created your own ocean.
Yeah.
And that's
what we shot for. Our tagline is, design, you know, faithcasters.net, designed by Christians for Christians. I mean, that's the whole marketing aspect. Everything is around the Christian niche.
Yeah. So now you're building a community that someone like Libsyn can't compete with. Mm-hmm. You know?
Exactly.
And I really do think it's very important, especially if people are starting out. It's often easier to niche and then become bigger than do what I did, which was just be everything and then kind of be like, you know what? I think I would just save myself a lot of stress and headache by just niching down, you know? And I had the opportunities to go back to niching up and I just don't want to.
Yeah. You teach how to make a business what you call anti-fragile. What does that mean?
So there's a book. Let me see if it's called Anti-Fragile. I think it is. It's by the guy who wrote The Black Swan.
Okay.
Anti-Fragile. Yeah, it's by Nassim Taleb. Yeah, Anti-Fragile. And that means that no matter what happens in the world, you know, because we have these black swan events, which happen once every 100 years or so, which just happen. Mm-hmm. And I got to tell you, my business didn't feel it at all. It actually became more popular.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. Like actually online course sales are bigger in April for the industry than for the whole 2019.
Yeah.
So part of that was luck. You know, I'm not saying like this was all, you know, premeditated. Like I knew it's going to be the course space. I did not. But I did know that, you know, a couple things will probably work in my favor. One is I already put a lot of constraints on my business. I can work from anywhere as long as there's an internet connection. Mm-hmm. I'm in an industry that's not going anywhere. E-learning is definitely not going anywhere. It's only going to get bigger. Now, I didn't know we'd have to stop actually physically going out, but I knew more people would want to learn online for a lot of different reasons. So, you know, Anti-Fragile pretty much has those components where your industry is only going to get bigger, right? And one where you can really work from anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully have no overhead, you know, because that's even better, at least minimum overhead.
Right.
And the people that you do hire are easily replaceable because all of us have teams. And it took me a while to get this down, right? But I've been studying McDonald's for a long time. And being able to take a kid off the street, showing them the system or procedure and having them be able to do it really makes your business untouchable. You know, if you can still make a profit from something like that.
Yeah.
I'm 75% there. I still need coders sometimes, mm-hmm. but we are moving more into the no code zone. So I think within 5-10 years, we'll be able to have machines and AI do a lot of that for us. So I won't even need this person anymore.
Yeah.
But those are things you should look for, especially this situation taught us that this anything could happen, really.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, if the internet goes out, we're all done. But
for sure.
Let's hope that, you know, we're still not going to go that far.
That leads us into the question of having your staff that, you know, you can hire, like I could hire a virtual assistant from Thailand or the Philippines or something. How do you manage a staff that you never meet or that you only meet online?
Well, so the first thing I did was hire a manager that could perform simple tasks and go over my SOPs, which are the standard operating procedures and kind of, mm-hmm. oh, yeah, I go over this. Can you do it? Okay. Because it should be dumbed down enough where anyone up the street can do it, right? So, okay, manager, go ahead. Do this a couple times. You got this? Good. Hire someone to do it. Same thing with the next task. Can you kind of pull this off? If it's a design thing, it's like, I know it doesn't look good. You're not a designer, but you know what needs to be done, right? How long did it take you? 30 minutes. Great. Go hire someone else.
Mm-hmm.
So your job as the business owner is figure out what makes you money consistently and never do that again.
Okay.
Have other people do those parts. The only piece that you should kind of keep for yourself is sales. I find a lot of business owners try to outsource sales, and really quickly they figure out that they don't own their company anymore because the salesperson owns the company now.
Because
that's the only thing that makes the company run, right? Like if people tell me, oh, I have a business and it's not working, what should I focus on? Sales. If there's money coming in, you can figure out the rest. Mm-hmm. Usually. I mean, you know, it's like it's much easier, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point because a lot of people will hire, you know, the lack of a better term, I'll just say a telemarketer to do the sales calls and things like that. And if they decide, you know what, I want double pay or I quit, you're stuck.
You're stuck. You're done. Like what happens is people say, you know, oh, you know, I got to get back to you after I speak, you know, with the key person on my team. And I'm like, you know what, don't get back to me anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Cause you don't even own the business. Like I should be talking to the key person and not you,
mm-hmm.
which is something you need to fix. But I will just not work with those companies. I'm like, you're in too much trouble right now. You don't even know it. And it's sad. It's sad. But I've seen it many times. People outsource the sales process without understanding how to do it themselves.
Mm.
It's different if you do it and you're just too lazy to do it, but it's, you know, but you can quickly come back in. It's like, oh, you left? Fine. That just means I got to work until I hire someone else. That's a little different than if someone else just is doing it for you and you're just like, oh man, please bring some sales in.
That's a good point. That really is a good point. You know, because many people fall for the scam, you know, of, oh, go online, make $1 million while you sleep. But, you know, often moving online is more difficult than actually having a brick or mortar business. You know, I mean, how can those who are not accustomed to the emotional roller coaster of trying to bring traffic in off the street into a brick and mortar business and suddenly decide, well, I'm going to go online and the world is, you know, going to come to me. How can they survive that type of emotional roller coaster?
You know, most people are not meant to be business owners.
Yeah.
You know, when you really think of it, you know, like I know in America now we kind of glorified it. You know, like, oh, be your own boss. Everyone's a boss lady or boss man or, you know, whatever, like this thing we have running through the media. But the truth is, like, a lot of people just aren't cut out for it.
Yeah. Oh, man.
You know, when you're starting out, and in this situation, you might be listening and be like, well, you know, I need to make money. You know, I need to go online. And this is where you're sort of just moving from kind of one master to the next, right? Like you don't have your boss anymore, but now you can put your knowledge on Amazon, Udemy, Skillshare, all these. And you might make some good money, but you have another boss and you just, you know, you can make money, but you just won't have that freedom. You won't have that control, which, you know, for some people works. You can make a lot of money. Like I had a client that put out 100-something courses on Udemy. Really hardworking guy. Took him maybe a year and a half, and he made $250,000 in the first year. Zero control. But does it matter? You know, like he made $250,000 mm-hmm. from a job, basically. But still, you know, so you still can pull it off. You just need to understand that you're not building a business. You're just making money again, and you need to kind of work for someone in a way.
Mm-hmm. So what about getting partners? You know, would that help make running an online business easier?
If you have partners, you need to understand that it's like getting married. And I rarely see it work out,
mm-hmm.
you know, because it's hard. Like you pretty much have this new relationship you got to kind of work with for a long, long time. And if you do have partners, it's not like, hey, Susie, hey, Cindy, let's start a business. Well, we both don't know what we're doing. It's not a good partnership, right? Like the ones that I see that work out well, Lead Pages, company owned by two guys that I know. And it started out from one guy being an incredible marketer with zero technical skills and another guy being an amazing builder, developer with zero marketing skills. Mm. One built, one marketed.
Yeah.
And both did an amazing job at it. And it was a good partnership. They made, I don't know how many million dollars, but great company. That can work.
Hey, folks, Pastor Bob here. We're all out of time again today with our interview with Tom LaBelle. Now, this is part two of a three-part interview, so we'll be finishing this interview tomorrow. You should have a whole notebook full of information and tips and notes from what Tom's been sharing with us today. He has just laid it all out there for you to write down and take it and run with it. He is an expert at what he does, and he has been just sharing with us as churches and pastors and ministries and businesses about how to set up your business. That information he just gave about partnerships is priceless. I'm telling you, you need to go back over and listen to that again, because you need to cover yourself in that. And with this virus situation going on at the time of this recording, a lot of people are going online for their business needs. Not just the business owners trying to start a business, but those who are looking for products and information and things like that. So you need to be careful, and Tom's given us some great tips on this. Now, you need to come back tomorrow, and we will be concluding our interview with Tom LaBelle. Till then, this is Pastor Bob reminding you to be blessed in all that you do. Are you a Christian entrepreneur, coach, or author with a message that needs to be heard? Picture this: your voice reaching thousands, your story inspiring hearts, and your business flourishing like never before. Introducing Faithcasters, the ultimate platform that connects faith-driven professionals like you with the power of podcasting. Become a sought-after guest on faith-based podcasts. Share your unique insights and connect with like-minded individuals who share your passion for faith and entrepreneurship as well. Imagine your expertise reaching a wider audience, expanding your network, and propelling your business to new heights. Well, it's all within reach with Faithcasters. So don't wait. Take the first step today on your journey to greatness by visiting our website at faithcaster.org. That's faithcaster.org. Join the Faithcasters community now and unleash the full potential of your faith-driven enterprise. You do not want to miss this opportunity. Faithcasters, where faith meets podcasting and your dreams become reality. Visit faithcaster.org. Let's soar together. And remember, anyone can be a podcaster, but only a Christian can become a Faithcaster. Faithcasters, your voice, your platform, your success.